welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
And die by my hand, creep across the land, killing firstborn men. Die by my hand, creep across the land, killing firstborn men. Yeah.
I wasn't sure how I would do it.
You're more like late Hatfield than early Hatfield, but you're still very good.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the rock and roll DM, the heavy metal, thrash metal, speed metal DM Dave. Obviously, Creeping Death by Metallica. Possibly, I mean, like, it's in the running for, like, greatest Metallica song.
It's in the running.
It's iconic. That's good. Yeah, I wasn't sure. It was definitely later Hetfield. I should have listened to the original, and then like I could have gone on his more like youthful voice and not burn my throat out. Anyway, so why are we talking about Creeping Death? Mainly because I saw a Facebook video post thing yesterday that was of Jason Newsted and his current band doing a live cover of it. So I was like, that's awesome. And then I was like, and we're going to talk about death today because we have a listener question. Now, this is a bit of a, you know, it is a listener question, but it's also a little bit of a ringer. So I'm just going to throw it out here
a little bit
and I'll let you guys decide here. Okay. So, magnificent and all-seeing DMs, this lowly supplicant begs a boon of your wisdom. So, like,
well paid,
poetic.
That's like two of them. Jeez.
Yeah, that's two. You now have a, you now have a free question. You get a free question without having to do a thing. So, I am curious on your views about death, specifically on the death of player characters, which I'm glad about because I didn't know if we were just going to talk philosophically about death and the afterlife and if, you know, we're going to like Jean-Paul Sartre. I don't know. I have been blessed to play with you three DMs along with Thorin and now Monster Wrangler Matt in nearly 7 years of play. Not one character has been killed permanently. This is not actually true, but we will get into this. First, do you think the 5e rules make it hard to actually kill a player character? The death roll mechanism and the ability of other players to help stabilize them make it very difficult to kill someone without somehow isolating them from help or hitting them with massive damage to kill them outright. And even if they do die, there are often ways to bring them back. I started playing D&D back with the white box, and death was a constant companion. You might go through a dozen characters before you manage to get one to survive to reach to fifth level. The current game just isn't like that at all. Thoughts? Secondly, what are your personal philosophies about killing a player character? Do you try to avoid it at all costs? Only do it if a player ignores warnings and does something really stupid? Or just let the dice fall where they may? Finally, do you feel that running pre-made modules and adventures inhibits your ability to kill player characters? Most of these follow a pretty set script, and suddenly losing a character midway might derail the story. I eagerly await your answers. The Wizard Washburn. So this one is from Scott. Scott, thank you very much for the question. It's actually a question he was asking. We started talking about on the ride home from one of the last LOTR games that Chris was running, and he just kind of was making the point that, and he asked me, I said, you know what, send in that question, because I know we've talked about character death, not player death, character death before, but this is a good one because he has played with all of us, so yeah, let's get into it. Let's talk about one of the most divisive topics in D&D, I think, and RPGs, character death.
So let me start going from the things that I feel that are definitely more concrete. We'll move into the more opinion-based ones. Is it harder to kill somebody in 5e than the previous systems. Absolutely. I mean, first and second edition Dungeons & Dragons felt like Call of Cthulhu to me. Like, I could die
no at doubt.
Third level opening a closet door. I mean, those were good times. The best and the worst of times, right?
Stairs!
Right? It's Chris, yes, stairs. Yes, never forget. Stairs. Man, that was horrifying.
It adds a level of tension. Yes.
Right? You're not expecting to be walking down the stairs, have to make extremely hard dexterity checks on the stairs because the lights went out. Next thing you know, you're all in a pile of rusted metal. That was just...
Well, I mean, just really, I don't want to derail your point, Tony, but that, I mean, it is a good point. Like, you know, because what I look for in any kind of adventurer or investigator is a person that probably for safety reasons needs to move into like a one floor bungalow in like a retirement community because the stairs are so dangerous for your aged parents. Like,
well, you know, in that same Call of Cthulhu adventure that I'm referencing, the bed on the second floor became animated, hit one of the other characters and knocked him out the window. And I don't know if it had killed him, but it damn near killed him. And, you know, that's just an example of the absurd tension at all times. And it's kind of like you're watching a horror movie where there's no breaks of levity. If it's just you're coming at you like, you know, heavy in the beginning, it's very difficult to maintain that level of energy, not just over a session, but throughout a campaign. Now, if you're seeking... There's two schools of thought in this, and honestly, neither are wrong. I've played with a lot of people who are on both sides of the table here. Some people believe that they like it very gritty, very real, and life and death is around every turn. And yes, getting to fifth level is a true achievement. And philosophically, it is, because fifth level player characters are extraordinarily powerful compared to what the NPCs are in the world, right? But that also, if you're going to be throwing characters where they're going to be dying off, then that's just a fact of life. It's not also going to go into the style of, I've spent weeks creating a backstory. You don't put that kind of energy into it. And if you die mid-game, and I'm sitting here rolling up dice on the sidelines to get my new character to spawn magically in this adventure, you're certainly not going to see it there either.
No, I think that we made a good point. The system evolved over time. I think the time required to be able to create a character, the energy you're going to put into them changes. Besides just different changes with the death rolls and all those other things that allow you a chance to be able to stabilize somebody and have people not die. But I just think it's, for me, it's just the time required, like the amount of stuff that you're putting into the characters versus what you want into. But then on the other point, your point, Call of Cthulhu, you can go in there with a fully fledged backstory. The expectation, I think, has become different for 5e, is that if the expectation isn't about, it's about fun and everything like that. Cthulhu, that element of death and danger is kind of what you go into one of those games for. So I think there's room on both, but the only problem I have is that for 5e, I just don't think, I think like until you die, there's a whole lot of tension. Right. As your hit points are going down, as your friends are dropping, as you take two or three of the party out, there's tension there. There's something usable. It's fun. Right. That's the stuff you're going to talk about afterwards. If you're dead, well, all right. There's no more tension there. Right. Like, I mean, there's an emotional weight. But for me, it's for the style that I mean, maybe it's a personal thing. The style I like is that I want to play in that area where you were right near death, but if I put you over the end, then the ride is no fun anymore, right? I want you to be thrilled. I don't want you to necessarily go home that night and be like, well, that was, you know, I've been working on that character for 20 sessions. Like, you know, those kind of things. So I think, you know, it's a balance of that.
That actually, I mean, both of you guys brought up some really good points. But Chris, that one was really, really prescient in that the tension of it really is when things are starting to kind of, you know, a cascade failure, right? Things start to fall and the dominoes are falling and that adrenaline dump starts to happen. So once the death occurs, that's kind of it, right? Like, there you go, done. But like, there's so much to unpack with all these things. And Tony, you were absolutely right. The answer is yes, it is a lot harder to quote unquote kill a player, a character in 5e than it was in any of the earlier iterations, anything before third,
or any of the OSR stuff, right? But I mean, I will push back because we have actually had permadeath, and it was Scott's character in the Basic Fantasy Roleplay game that I ran for his birthday. It was one of our first birthday games that we did was for Wizard Washburn, and we were playing Basic Fantasy Roleplay. And that is a complete retro clone of, like, you know, Beck-Me, BX kind of D&D. And he got wiped. I think, like, the first attack that happened, he just, boom, he's just down.
It like, was there's really no, early in his birthday.
Yeah, yeah, like, and, like, was
happy
now,
birthday.
Yeah, now he did love arrows that, in your neck. Right? He did love that because it reminded him of that nostalgia of the early D&D, you know. But there's so, I will say too, Eva, his cleric in Dragonlance, absolutely died. She walked down to the stone, the crystal, pumped every bit of divine energy in, and it blew up and killed her. But I kind of took the path of what Thorin would say a lot of times. He's like, the story doesn't just end because they're dead. Like, there's still story to be found, and we did have it. You know, she was in the afterlife with Mishakal, and she had the chance to come back. The party had the chance to try to bring her back. You guys had to do a ritual to bind her to the land. We still don't know what exactly that means, but it happened, right? Like, there was so much story that came from that, from character death, but not just permadeath. Okay, well, roll somebody else up, right? There's so many things that are in rolling in my head, but one of the biggest things I think is that Chris, you jumped on this, where the game has evolved and changed too, where, and we've talked about this before, old video games, I'm thinking something like, you know, like Contra, Gauntlet, right? Like the old ones, right? It was a quarter pumper. You just would drop quarters in because, like, I just have to keep going because I'm going to just die. It's a grind, right? It's a straight-up grinding meat grinder dungeon delve. Video games then evolved because people were like, well, I don't like that. Like, in Zelda, I like that I have this large story. And then in Final Fantasy. And then in Skyrim. And then, right? And you build out until you're like, well, I really enjoy, like, the story of it, and just meat grinding players does get in the way of that possibly, right? So, but yeah.
So along those lines, let's use your example right there, Dave. Eva. Eva dies in Dragonlance. Eva was arguably the star of that show if it was cinematic, right? She's one of the people. She wasn't co-starring. She was starring it, and she died. Now, that put you in a position here. It puts you at the crossroads where you have to make a hard decision. You absolutely could have said, okay, Eva has died, and now we're going to have that affect the remaining players in X amount of ways, and they can go forward. And now I'm going to gamble. And I have a character who's an A. She was an A. She's dead, though. Is the player going to produce another A-level character to fill that void in the cinema, in the quality of the role play of the table? Can that be done? And I don't blame you. Bringing her back, like, in a one-time situation like that, makes sense to me as someone playing at the table. It's like, she's gone forever. Now this other person's going to show up. That person could be awesome. Maybe not. Not as awesome.
Yeah, I would say, like, I agree with you in a lot of ways, Tony, because, like, two things. And I'm just going to jump in because we are talking about the Eva thing. Because I have killed you, Scott, so eat it.
Chris died too, a call.
But, like, with that said, you guys were still on the lower end of level at that time. You had, like, the adventure had just kind of gotten going. You were in the Northern Waste. You were starting to investigate, you know, the thing and piece together the mystery. But it's not like you guys had fought all these wars together. So if Eva was dead, okay. Hey, remember that cleric we used to know? Like, you know, would it have necessarily been as impactful as, like, I read the entire Robin Hood series and Robin dies at the end and he shoots the, you know, bury me here, Little John, and he fires the arrow out and where it lands is where they bury him. Like, that matters because they've been through wars, right? Through a whole lifetime. With that too, I decided that, and this is one of my things where I said the idea, we always put it as killing, a PC, right? Killing a character. But like that does set up that old school, and that is a very old school thing where the DM and the players have this a little bit of a contentious relationship, right? It's like, I'm killing this, as opposed to character death occurs, right? It's a little bit of a different perspective. So what I did with Eva, I threw it back. Scott died, right? The character died. Scott didn't die. The character died. He's still playing with us. The character died. He's fine. It's okay, everybody. I threw it back to him, and I put him in the afterlife, in the river of time that like the afterlife goes towards in, with Kryn. And I was like, I kind of gave him the agency of, well, where does Eva want to go? You know? So it kind of threw it back. So it wasn't killing a PC. It was the PC, even though they've died, there's still agency, right? In the fantasy world. Anyway.
No, and I think to the point, it's a story arc thing. I think in 1E, it was, I go to, you know, the keep on the borderlands, and then I'm randomly taking jobs. And so if another guy shows up, he just
enter the caves of chaos.
Yeah the caves and of just camp start grinding. But it was very transactional, right? I would go, I would get some monster experience, I'd get some gold, whatever the things, and I'd bring those back. I think now with now that you have stuff like milestones, now that you're getting rewarded possibly for moving a plot forward, where it's not just that completely just experience is basically killing monsters and, you know, gaining gold and treasure like that. I think that it makes it just makes it easier to be able to have that some level of story arc. But back to your video game thing, I think there's in many ways there's two sides of it, because there's a game like Dead Cells where even though it's not truly permadeath, right?
It's a great game.
Basically, it basically resets you to the beginning of the story. But as the result of that, it doesn't have a, the experience isn't like something like Skyrim. Skyrim, right? I'm like a thing, and then I can regenerate in whatever like that. It's like you can come back. I go back to my previous save. With this one, it dumps you back at the beginning. And as a result, the story, while it sort of evolves as you kind of explore this procedurally generated dungeon, it's not the same as something like Skyrim, where there's this continuation and I'm kind of exploring the world and getting more of a continuity to my character, right? They're persistent across the game versus constantly having to reset to the beginning. With like, I feel like with that, you know, with the 1E thing, it was very easy to reset to the beginning because of the nature of it. We're now, to his point in the, about the project, like about modules and how you would design a campaign, you're designing it around story arcs where, you know, something like the Eva thing is an opportunity inside of that arc, but you're like, you have some idea of where this story is going, right? They're in the middle of something that's much more than just, oh, we went out to the Caves of Chaos to go get some gold and kill a couple of orcs, right? You know, and make it out quick, right? So it makes it much permadeath that much more just inconvenient, and it just doesn't lend itself to the fun at the table unless the player themselves is legitimately cool with it, right? Like I think that like with Cthulhu, I am completely enjoyed that, but I went in with the, you know, this is, I was not like I'm gonna kill myself at the first shot, but I went in like, this is okay, this is in some ways is winning this game. So but on the 5e side, I've always felt a little different.
Yeah, I do agree, Chris. I do find death to be inconvenient. Yeah. Tony, you can take this, but that does make me think, Chris. So it's not like you said, like it's like winning the game, but like we know that RPGs, we don't win the game, right? But it goes back to the old phrase where like we all win when we tell a good story. But depending on the adventure I'm playing, what's the good story? With Cthulhu, the good story is when someone dies horribly and stuff like that, right? The good story in Dragonlance or Lord of the Rings is when good triumphs over evil, right? And there's all kinds of different iterations of that, you know, a sword and sorcery, you know, what's the best story there, right? So I think it does not just system and things like that, but also what's the story that is being told, you know, and then that kind of plays into it. But
yeah, so there's definitely there's other types of defeat other than main character death. It could be loss, capture, meaningful NPCs, terrible things could happen to them.
The battle for Vogler.
That's a great example of that. You kind of stole that from me. No, the characters
it was so good.
Were
it
not so wiped good. In the Battle of Vogler, but we lost these NPCs, which had become low-key meaningful to us. We had been there for a session or two. No, they weren't part of the party. No, I wasn't related to anybody there, but they all felt alive, and they're part of the community, and we each did interactions with them, and their death and the loss of the city of Vogler was a loss to us. We didn't die. We weren't routed. We weren't captured. But that absolutely happened and made the world all the more darker. Now, death can often be judged as random and without meaning because of the dice. And that's a lot like real life. And you know, Chris, you'll agree with me. This is a fantasy, okay? Like, Chris and I get kicked in the friggin' teeth 5 days a week at work, and we're going to come down and have some fun. And by the way, you had a shit week at work. Everything was on the ceiling. And by the way, your character's dead. Enjoy Monday morning, okay? That's not necessarily my idea of a great time. But on the contrast of that, there's got to be character death that has to exist. No one's saying I would not kill a character because otherwise everyone's been running around like Errol Flynn, like they have main character energy doing these ridiculous things. And then they're like toddlers and you're trying not to kill them, even if they're putting themselves in situations they probably would absolutely be killed because you've kind of enabled that and you don't want to be there.
Yeah, I mean, how many times have we been in all of us run encounters where we're just dropping people again and again and again? It's not like we're because and there might be a point where I'm pulling a punch because, you know, because of what the story is telling us. Right. But at the same point, like, we're not setting up encounters to just be like, yay, the heroes win again. Right. If anything, it's because a lot of the we're all playing in the same games. We've been playing a long time and we think. Strategically, we think tactically, we try to, you know, to synergize a lot of times our abilities and things like that. So,
yeah. And it, like expectations at the table, like if you're comfortable with it, if the player is comfortable with it, like in the Dragonlance campaign, to our point, like Scott was comfortable with the idea of player death, right? Like it wasn't it were character death, whatever, but like he was comfortable with that. With that things, other people may not feel the same. Like I would feel it out. Also, you make it known at the beginning if this is going to be truly dangerous. But I think you guys make the point is that as long as you're not trying to kill yourself, I'm not going to go out of my way to kill you. Like I think if somebody, to your point, Tony, if somebody jumps off a cliff, right? Like that's going to be a lot of damage, right? Like let's roll for some damage there. Maybe you survive or something like that.
Warhammer tape measure.
But in a lot of other cases, it's like. As long as we're all working together, as long as you don't want to die, like I want the story to go on because I want to play next week or whatever next month, whenever, you know, the time required, but you know, that even running a 1E game, right? The time required for 5E is such that you want to keep playing with the group that you have, right? If you have those expectations, if that's the kind of game you want to run, then go with it. But for me, it's like, this is the time we have, like we very often, it's like once or twice a month. So, I don't want to spend it killing, like, right, and then have to wait a whole month for your chance to come back. If I were playing every day, if I kill you on Monday, you could be back by Wednesday or Friday and playing a character again. Now you're going to have to wait the entire month of July. Like, if, you know.
Chris, good point. It made me think, too, Chris, because actually in that same game, very early on, the Battle of High Hill, Rasguedo. Now, I, as the DM, adjudicated and allowed you to use an inspiration to re-roll a death save. I don't know if that's raw or not, whatever, but that's how I ran it, because you failed all three death saves. Now, you succeeded the final one. You succeeded the final one because you used an inspiration, and I was like, that's fine. Like, that's cool. But, like, same thing, right? Like, Rasguedo could have just been out easily, you know? So it definitely happens. But do I set it up in that way? I will say too, because it kind of falls back to a lot of what we're saying too, with especially like with 5e and stuff. And I know people have issues with the newer iterations, and people have issues with the OSR. People have issues, like everyone does, because as you're playing, you're always wanting to experience something new, something I haven't experienced, right? Or I haven't experienced for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I get that. But one of the things I wrote down here, I said, mechanics don't appear from the ether. Like, the idea of, do the death save mechanics make it harder to kill a character or for a character to permadie? Yeah. why did those appear? They didn't just appear because Jeremy Crawford said, you know what, let's just write that in there. Nobody likes it, but we're going to write it in there. It came because people were playing and went, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. For the same reason, in the white box, I feel like everyone who played it, and into first edition D&D, everyone could level a dwarf past level 9. Everyone could level an elf past level 9. I believe the rules said they couldn't, but the mechanics...
Even lower.
The mechanics changed, right? They don't just appear from anywhere. So, and that led me to the idea, because I said I was going to probably talk about it, but I'm going to be running Chris's birthday game this year for August, and I decided to run it in Shadowdark, the new Shadowdark RPG. I've been hearing a lot about it. It's pretty quick. It's pretty intuitive. So I think it's something that for what I'm kind of building might be fun. And one of the things, there's two things with Shadowdark really quick, but it goes to this idea of mechanics don't appear from the ether. So one of the big things about Shadowdark is there is no dark vision. There is no ability to see in the dark unless you have light source. And that is an integral part of the game as you delve into the Shadowdark, as it were, right? And why? It came because when she was playing the game, and I didn't hear her say this, Casey, who wrote the system, but I'm sure everyone, hey, I have dark vision. You know, you enter a dark, I have dark vision, right? It's become a meme, right? So what do? You change the mechanic to address something to make it different, right? The same point people talk about Shadowdark as not being good for a campaign because it's very based on dungeon delving. But again, that comes to that assumption that it's one or the other. And, you know, it's not, it depends on the story you're telling. So
to circle back to your other point there about where these rules came from, my take on the three death saves is that that's there for both the player and the DM. Because I've been in a situation, and I've said this many times on the podcast, where I made a character, took 3 weeks to 5 weeks to finish conceptualizing him, and then he blew a saving throw against X, and then he's freaking dead. Well, wasn't that rewarding?
Against the random encounter, too, right? Yeah. It's not even the villain. It's the random bugbear.
I wasn't fighting Darth Vader when I went down. No, sir. No, this was like I was walking between towns with my peeps, and there was another really memorable time. I was laughing about this with Chris, where there was like three or four of us, and we were like level 3 or maybe 4, maybe. But we were up against 3 hill giants. That happened. you're just so screwed. Like, who? I wish I remember what drugs I was on at the time to enter that fight. Me, like, that was a great time. But you know, seriously, character death. You know, it could certainly feel very random. Like the battle you're talking about at the hill where Resqueda went down. Guess what? Why didn't Sir William use his paladin powers to heal Resqueda, you ask? Because he had his teeth kicked in by a horse. Okay, it's a random moment there. I got punched like a young Mike Tyson hit me, and the great Sir William in his, you know, youth as a squire was on his back, you know, talking to God. He's like, I'm on a 9 count trying to get up. It was a real mess. But I will say, at no point in all the games I've ever sat in, okay, it's something, the engagement's been different depending upon these games. There's some games where I was on the edge of the seat, and the other, maybe not so much. I was never like, this game would be really just a bit better if some of us died. I never made that connection.
I hear that, Tony, because it's that idea, and it goes back to when we talk about TPK or TPC, right? The total party capture. So two things. When you said the hill giant, it made me think, and then I'll just say the other thing, and then Chris, you can take it here.
Work. Yeah.
So Chris, you might remember this in Slaver's Bay. When I was running the Slaver's Bay, the first game of Slaver's Bay is when you guys, I threw you into the arena because it's gladiatorial, right? It's all Rome. And I threw you guys up against, like, I was very into, like, Spartacus, Blood and Sand at the time. So I literally, like, took, like, a bunch. And I told, in essence, the story of this world or this city through the games, right? And the final battle was, and it was, like, 6 to 8 of you, I want to say. It was a huge table. The final battle was against Theocles, the Shadow of Death, which was from Spartacus. And it was a hill giant. And that hill giant picked up a boulder, flung it at Thorin's wife's character, Shannon's character, and killed her immediately. For not even the first round hadn't even started. Just boom, done, right? Like, now she was able to get, like, you know, to heal up or whatever. But, and then in the girls game that I was running, they were it was a random encounter where I had a couple bugbears attack them. And
they're tough.
Oh my God, they destroyed them. And I was like, okay, well, we're like three sessions in. Like, there's more story that they want to do. So it turned into a capture, which was way more thrilling in terms of the story, the same way Thorin did in the Woodstock game. It was so much more thrilling when we got our asses handed to us to awaken chained up with Sir Brother Maynard, right, than just being killed and rolling up new characters. So,
although I did miss the Red Cap episode, I was not there for that. And
well, that was after that, when the Red Caps absolutely annihilated us again, because Thor did not understand the CR system at the time, and threw each of us had a CR3 monster coming
with
at
three
us,
attacks around,
and we were third level. So
seems fair. Master Swordsman, Demon Mushrooms, yes.
No, and I think a lot of it, too, we were kind of talking about Cthulhu and things. It's the genre. Like, I think when you talk about epic fantasy, in epic fantasy, characters get resurrected. Sometimes they're gone forever, and it's part of the emotional weight of the world. But very often it's like that. Well, it's like, I think a good example is when we were talking about Boomtown, you know, or in earlier sessions. And in that case, we're making it a little bit more of a dangerous world. So there is more of an expectation. It's not. It's not a Lord of the Rings or something like that sort of thing, you know, high fantasy thing. It's going to be something a little bit more gritty. It's a little bit more of the Wild West. Well, I'm sure that, you know, epic fantasy can be dangerous too, sure. But I think in those cases, it's just, for me, it suits more with the genre that you're kind of leaning into. And I think 5e especially, it's mostly epic fantasy, right? It dressed up in some form and stuff like that, which very much lends it to it. I mean, they brought Gandalf back, right? They brought Jon Snow back. It's been done
Chris,
so many times.
That's a perfect example. I was actually thinking about Lord of the Rings when I was thinking about this question. And so what do we see? We see Boromir dies, right? In a very heroic way, you know, especially following his temptation of the ring and all that. And he dies saving the hobbits, right? But like, is Boromir, maybe he's a player character at the table, or maybe he's an NPC. But then, like, by the end, does anybody even talk about Boromir anymore? Like, no, they're talking about Faramir. They're talking about, you know, and Gandalf, who's the NPC, gets quote unquote killed, but he comes back resurrected, right? So yeah, very much the story, right?
Well, you know, I'll tell you one better, okay? Gandalf, who appeared as a beloved figure in The Hobbit, then dies in that sequence that we all very well know in Lord of the Rings. What would that story have been like had he died there? You know, like, you killed off one of your core A-listers. You know, like, Aragorn has been introduced, Legolas has been introduced, Gimli's been introduced. These are all relatively new characters at this point in the story. You've got Bilbo, who is a nephew, or excuse me, you've got Frodo, who's the nephew of Bilbo. And then you've killed off the beloved wizard. He's dead. You could do that. You could have the feels for that and been like... Then you've got people writing fanfictions like, what if Gandalf had survived? But I don't know that would have... I kind of support Tolkien. I definitely support Tolkien's decision there to bring him back.
It does. It's Chris's idea, though, the idea of the genre and story. Sword and Sorcery Conan is going to... I'm going to approach it way different than a Cthulhu mystery, than an epic high fantasy, than a superhero movie, right?
No, I think superheroes is a good... point too, is that even in that one's, like, there's just like permadeath, even in the comics, is a very rare thing, because it's about story. I think it's about that tension. It's like everything up to that, unless it's an NPC, which lends emotional weight, but if it's one of your core people, you don't want to do that unless that person wants to, right? If that person genuinely wants to get rid of their character, or their
it's Thunderbird, dude.
you know, John Proudstar on destruction, whatever. But besides that, I mean, that's the thing. There's always a way. And I think, like, to your early points, like getting caught, all those other things, it's just more story now. Now it's a cool, it's extra story, it's tension. It's not like I got to send you home thing. You go home that night and you're like, oh, we got captured, right? Not like, oh, crap, I got to, like, roll up a character. And to your point, Tony, like, and I got to go to work tomorrow. All right. And it's like this sucks kind of thing. So I think it's just sort of that balance, right? Like that you're trying to make sure that people are, like I said, the time required. I think for us, we're older now. So it's, you have that much less time when you get together. You don't want to waste it. If we were 17 and you're playing every day, there's time for doing that, for killing characters off all the time. It's just as you get older, it just becomes an inconvenience, right? You know, so it's.
Chris, I mean, it's a good point because, like, think of, like, with the, like, the superhero genre is a great example because, like, we came up in what I consider one of the best times in comics, which was the, like, 80s time. That's just, you know, whatever.
Pretty amazing.
It really was. But, like, think about, like, I just made the joke, like, John Proudstar, right? Thunderbird in the X-Men, right? Like, he dies, like, issue 3. Right, of like the new X-Men, right? He comes out and it's just like he's just an asshole and then he dies and you're like, oh well, Thunderbirds. And like he was a permadeath, right? But then think about like when in Alpha Flight when they kill off Sasquatch, when he turns, he's actually like you have the big reveal that it's not like the Hulk where he's just ripped a hole and one of the great beasts can take Walter Lankowski over. And you're like, oh my God. And he turns on the team and Snowbird has to turn into another Sasquatch and rips his heart out. It's one of the greatest scenes in comics, in my opinion. And then what do? They go on the search for Walter Lankowski because his soul is still out there. He inhabits Box for a little while. He inhabits Smart Aleck for a while, right? Superman, the Death of Superman series, which was definitely a ploy to try to push more comics. But Superman came back, the return of the Superman. Great story arc. It took time. It changed the Man of Steel, but it was still that spread is still one of the most impactful spreads when Lois is holding him and he said, did we win? Did I stop him? Right. And then the last one that I'm thinking of is, damn it. It was a good one.
The death of Superman, I just Googled while you were talking about this, how many times has Superman died?
And right. Yeah.
Google came back with it, said Superman has died countless times across various media and different stories.
Yeah.
Now, why the death of Superman would ever matter is because he is a vested character. And that's one of the other things, too. I can't miss you if I never knew you. You're a character who is for a session or two, and then you died. Well, then this arguable throwaway character you had is gone. Well, that sucks. And we'll talk about you for a session or two, but we'll move on. This brings me back to when Pinkerton the Halfling died in the Red Box game. She was the star of the Red Box campaign. Everybody loved her, and then Hobgoblins killed her, and then they're like, well, we lost our star. And was the next one as magical as she was? Unfortunately, no.
That's what I remember now who I was thinking of, Jason Todd.
Robin, oh, yeah.
Death in the Family. He was such a hated character that they literally had a 900 number that you could call to decide, does Jason live or die? And the fan base at that time, because comic fan base has always been toxic, I guess, was like, no, kill his ass. So Death in the Family is amazing. And he gets bludgeoned to almost death by the Joker. Awful, with a crowbar. Then the fucking warehouse gets blown up with him in it. And the panel of Batman carrying his broken body through the rubble. Guess what? Jason Todd comes back, people, and he's just a human, you know?
Well, Lazarus like Red exist Hood, in that continuity. You know?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, even in the comics, so.
And I think that's the sweet spot, is that it's if it suits your story, if everybody's on board with it, then it works for something, but permadeath doesn't ever really work unless the person really just wasn't part of the, you know, somebody like a Boromir, right, who was an important figure in it, but wasn't necessarily part of the team that was going to go on.
So, yeah, so I think that we have, I think we talked about this pretty well. I think we covered all the points. So why don't we get to some final thoughts here on the Wizard Washburn's question about permadeath. In essence, this is about permadeath and the, you know, not death of characters, but permadeath. So final thoughts.
I feel like this is a topic that people feel as passionately about as Android versus iPhone. I mean, they've got some very strong opinions on this. And I'm just, my position is, I honestly, from the depths of my heart, when being on both sides of this, as a DM, as a player, and countless games, there really is no right or wrong answer. I feel like our current style of play definitely leans toward, because we're more story-driven and cinematic, leans towards higher tension, other areas where the players can be defeated and or captured or have losses without actually killing off one of your more beloved, valuable characters to the story and the table dynamic. Take that as you may. Kill off. I mean, again, you know, you talk about session zero, but like, yeah, death's already waiting around any corner and I could die and I've got six character sheets with me. Then go with that. Otherwise, maybe not so much.
Yeah, no, I think having tension there, I don't think death lends itself to tension. I think as the system evolved, obviously 5e has leaned into that story-based mode where it's like we want to have these characters develop over time. But I think there's still room for it in the game as long as there's some level of expectation at the table. Like I said, if it's Cthulhu, even if it's a 5e game and you want to run it a little bit, things, you want to change the mechanics, I'm going to take death saves out or something like that. As long as everybody at the table is cool with that. And I think that if that's how you guys want to have fun, that's cool. But yeah, for me, I'm you really have to try to kill yourself for me to want to remove you from the group and our chance at playing, because the time that we have and the time required that for these games, it doesn't lend itself to killing you off 5 minutes into the game and having you sit there doing nothing or something or having to work on your next character for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, if I'm rolling up a 1E character or a Shadow Dark character, I can do it in about 3 minutes. I can't quite do that with a 5e character. But I will say, it kind of boils down to tone and story. None of the rules, we talk about this all the time, there's raw and then there's how you play at your table, and that's constantly shifting. So I think a lot of this, Tony, you said it right, there is no right answer. So anyone who thinks they have the right answer is wrong, because not every table is going to have that do. I did forget about one, though. Chris, we forgot about Funk and Hottie Peak. In the Pathfinder game.
Oh, dear God,
yeah. So the first one, when we all got back together in our adult gaming time, I was running the Pathfinder campaign, and where I made all of the trope mistakes and all of that, all the railroad mistakes that I could ever possibly make. But Chris was playing a wizard that he named Funk and Hottie Peak in honor of the old Against the Giants original module. Because that was the dude's name. And he straight up died. He's died mass damage from, like, dragon breath weapon. So I literally just grabbed his character sheet. I don't know if I actually ripped it or not, but I definitely grabbed your character sheet.
I don't think ripped it, yeah.
But with that, even with that, when Chris then started to run an adventure after that, it was this idea that Fonken existed in, like, a different timeline or something. Like, so it was still, like, there's story to be told here, depending on what's the adventure, right? So, again, tone and story. If I'm running a meat grinder, I'm running Tomb of Horrors, and you guys all bring, you know, character sheets, and let's just see who wins by the end. Awesome. If I'm playing a Conan Sword and Sorcery kind of thing, that's going to be a little different. If I'm playing a Lord of the Rings campaign, it's going to be a little different. If I'm playing the superhero campaign. So tone and story are the most important things. And the last thing I will say is, I really do think that that's a good point, that the mechanics don't appear out of the ether. These things develop over time because of the ways in which people are playing and what they're looking for. And you can always change those, but changing them doesn't mean that the other one sucks now. It doesn't have to be an either or. It can always be an and, right? So that is going to be it for me this week. Scott, thank you very much for the question, because, again, we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So if you have problems, questions, issues, things that you're dealing with at your table in your game, reach out to us. You can get us at 3wisedms.com. the website. Put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach out to us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And you can ask us questions or talk with us and interact on Facebook and Instagram. We are very active on those sites. We are part of a lot of the groups, too. So you guys, you know, jump in and start a conversation with us. And for, like, death save stuff, like, I really like some of the idea of, like, death saves being rolled, like, in secret. So, like, the rest of the players, like, Matt started to play with this in the Tyranny game. Like, the rest of the players don't know, right? Like, everyone with Rasguedo knew that, oh, he has some death saves. And then they forgot that you only have three. And, you know, so, but, you know, like, these things are built in for that, too. So, get yourself some cool death save dice, you know, whatever. They probably have skulls on them or, you know, whatever. Then the 20 maybe has like an angel, because that's the divine intervention that brings you back to one hit point. You can read us at our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. Put in the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. You get 10% off your order of not just death-saving dice, but any dice that you would like, or dice sets, or dice rollers, or dice mats, or all the crazy stuff they have right now. So that's going to be it for us this episode. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you like what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com, or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, you know, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise Games.